So we see the danger of distorted, excessively sentimental messaging in the biological world. What about in physics? As a passionate science explainer, the late Carl Sagan, understanding science, and particularly physics, was a matter of life and death.
We've reached a point where there can be no more special interests or special cases. Nuclear arms threaten every person on the Earth. We have heard the rationales offered by the superpowers. We know who speaks for the nations. But who speaks for the human species? Who speaks for Earth?
Sagan speaking there in his famous series Cosmos, which planted the seeds for a whole new generation of science and physics explainers, including Sagan protege, physicist, and BBC science broadcaster Brian Cox. Cox says Sagan's legacy is getting scientists to realize that if they don't step up like Galileo to argue against distortion and myth, they will lose the war for truth, even if they win the battle of being correct.
It's an interesting debate, actually, that over the years and decades that people have been presenting science, particularly on television, that there's always been a sense in which it's frowned upon by certain elements in the scientific community. I think that's less true now. And the reason is that we've realized as a community that we have to explain our science. We have to convince people, the public who pay for a lot of this science, that it's worth doing. And also, a lot of us believe that the more scientific our society is, the better it will be. I mean, Carl Sagan, one of my heroes, always pointed out that we live in societies now, in a civilization that rests on foundations of science and engineering. They are, in many ways, the reason we have a civilization. So in a democracy, if you have a large number of people, and perhaps the majority, who know nothing about science, then it's, first of all, it's anti-democratic. But secondly, you're in danger of making bad decisions. And the big decisions that we face now as a civilization have scientific answers, be them questions about climate change or energy provision. All those things require scientific answers. And so you need a scientifically literate population. And I think that's new thinking, actually. That realization has come quite late to the scientific community, as you imply.
So back to these characters. You say Carl Sagan is a hero of yours. Is he an evangelizer? Is he a marketer of science? Is he, I don't know what, is he an entertainer?
All of those. I think he was also a polemicist. And that one of the things that I found compelling about Cosmos was that it had a point of view, and particularly the very famous 13th episode, which was absolutely about the big issue of the time, or one of the big issues, which was the threat of nuclear war, which is all that nuclear war, that threat has receded somewhat now. But so Sagan used a scientific documentary to talk about this stupidity, the futility of that kind of position. He was very interested, actually, in one of the great questions, the so-called SETI program, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. And himself and Frank Drake and others were very concerned by the fact that we don't see any evidence of any other civilizations anywhere in the Milky Way galaxy. Never seen a hint of evidence. And the thing, just recently, there was a remarkable number published from the data from the Kepler telescope, which is looking for planets around other stars. It's estimated there are 20 billion Earth-like planets in the so-called habitable zone around stars in the Milky Way. One in five stars, probably, or maybe one in 10 stars, have a habitable Earth-like planet around them, we think, based on the small number of measurements we've got. So this really brings that into focus. Where are those civilizations? Sagan felt that probably what happens is they destroy themselves. So they don't live very long. They get to a certain level of technological maturity and destroy themselves. So what I found compelling about Cosmos was he put that into the documentary. So it was a polemic. He was saying to us, you know, we have to behave better. We're on the verge of destroying ourselves. And that possibly that's what all civilizations do.
Well, Sagan took on as his personal mission the sense that nuclear war is futile, actually could destroy the species, and here's the scientific rationale for that, and also that the search for extraterrestrial life and the space program is something we should absolutely continue doing. It's a part of our being. Your colleague Neil deGrasse Tyson says some of the same kinds of things. What is your mission to explain, to turn people on fire over?
I think it's something Sagan also touched on in his book, The Demon-Haunted World, Science as a Candle in the Dark, which is that the facts, the things that we've learned about the universe are wonderful and capture people's imagination. But I think equally important, or perhaps more important, is is speaking about what it means to make a scientific statement, what doing science actually is. So when we talk about a so-called controversial subject, certainly in political circles, like global warming, man-made global warming, is the climate heating up because of our actions? People need to know what those models mean, what it means to say we've taken some measurements, we've measured the sea temperatures and the ice areas in the Arctic and all those things, and we've got these computer models and they predict this within some kind of range with errors. What that means, because it's quite technical, it's very technical, it's very difficult. What we're talking about with science is we're trying to understand the natural world, the world that is out there. We're observing it, trying to understand how it works. That's got nothing to do with whether you're a Democrat or a Republican or whatever you are. But I think that obviously that issue is a very good one to address these issues, because it's all mixed up. You know, mostly the people who don't like the science will be Republicans, right? But mostly, just broadly speaking. And the people that like the science will be Democrats. And that shows you that there's something wrong with the public debate. There's a misunderstanding, because science is completely blind to politics.
And in your mission, I guess scientists deal with an enormous amount of uncertainty. But at a certain point, you have to kind of say, all right, this is a settled question.
It's the big problem with communicating science, but it's the strength of science. The reason it works is because there are no absolute truths. You're never right. So given that we're never right, you know, it's always open to reinterpretation and challenge. Science, it gives you answers that are the best you can do given the available data. There's no doubt about that. It's obvious, actually. If you look at the way our civilization has developed, the knowledge we use to build aeroplanes or to build power stations or to build mobile phones, cell phones, whatever it is that you want, that it's obviously based on scientific discovery at some point in the past. So it's that simple idea that while science is never right, there are no absolute truths in science, therein lies its strength, always open to challenge. It is, however, the best you can do if you want to answer a question, a well-posed question, like, is it true that burning fossil fuels changes the climate? And if so, by how much? That's a scientific question.
Let's end on a non-scientific question that will be an absolute truth. Brian Cox, what's your favorite color?
My favorite color? Blue. The color of the sky.
And on that note, Brian Cox, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Brian Cox is a leading British physicist and a science broadcaster on the BBC. We want to encourage you to be a part of this conversation we've been having all week on trust in government and institutions, and even whether the government has some trust issues.
My name is Charlie. I'm from Arlington, Texas, and I have trust issues all the way from the local police all the way up to the highest levels of government. It seems like nobody these days is taking into account the fact that 99% of us are innocent and have nothing to do with any sort of crimes, yet we're all being treated as criminals and terrorists.
That's it for this hour. The Great Divides, Europe, economic, the great trust divide in America today. If you want to catch up on that conversation or listen back to anything on the program, go to thetakeaway.org. Get in touch at 8778-MY-TAKE or send us a tweet at The Takeaway. Thanks so much for listening. I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway. I nearly wrote my will.
The Takeaway is supported by the Henry Luce Foundation for increased understanding of East and Southeast Asia, and the Rockefeller Foundation, whose transportation initiative is promoting equitable and sustainable developments in communities across the country.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.